Welcome to the Body Bag Podcast. I'm your host, Broker R. Dave, and with me, as always, my host, Chris Thomas.
This show brought to you by Tubi. Not really, but it's been on my radar lately.
Or is he really Chris Thomas?
That doesn't sound like something Chris Thomas would say.
Yeah.
He would say something like, "What's good, everybody?"
Yeah. Are you the thing?
I am. Fuck.
Gotcha.
He knows.
Didn't have to do the test.
Well, spoiler alert.
We are reviewing one of Chris's favorite movies.
It is in the running to be as a thank you for me being generous by giving him the wrong movie last time. We're gonna actually talk about one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, a movie that has grown on me.
Well, I'm glad to hear. Yeah. I think it's cool that you lean more towards Wes Craven. I'm more John Carpenter.
Yeah,
like when it comes Halloween time. I'm not stoked for Scream. I'm stoked for watching Halloween.
Yeah. I usually kick off, you know, my fall season with the Scream marathon.
Yeah, and I usually save the thing for, like, either the night before Halloween or I watch it, like, the Halloween Eve, like, after all the kids have gone.
Yeah, but it's a known fact that the thing is a remake of sorts. Have you ever watched the original? Was it The Things from Outer Space, I think it's called?
No, but that sounds like something that maybe we can do next season.
Yeah. I mean, it's old enough where it fits into the theme we're going to be doing, so.
Little spoiler in case people don't know about that, but Dave, Dave's having complete control, and he's told me a little bit about what he wants going on next season, and I dig it. I think it's a pretty cool way to kind of do a little bit of something different with a little bit of new.
Yeah.
And a little bit old, but that's for those of you who are still sticking around for season, what is it, 7?
Yeah, season 7. It's going to be fun. But first, we did have a little bit of homework.
We did have a little bit of homework, and I think might have, like, all right, so first off, no, do you want to go first or second? You gave me a movie called The Last Broadcast, and I gave you a movie called Z, which I had not seen, but I saw a preview of it, and I was like, all right. I'm gonna do a little Dave and throw him something I've never seen, see if he likes it.
Okay, have you watched it yet or no?
No, I know I said I was going to, but I didn't.
All right, let's get started with you and The Last Broadcast.
All right, The Last Broadcast, which Dave, I'm glad has been. I think Dave is starting to kind of hone in on my particular tastes.
Yeah.
Before we get into this, ladies and gentlemen, please stay tuned for a live podcast service as we attempt to commune with. The Jersey Devil. That'll make sense when I get into what we're talking about here. The Last Broadcast. Dave knows, apparently, I am into found footage and mockumentary-type movies, and this past year has inflamed my love for that genre. Like, Dave's tossed me a couple of, like, Dave's always going to have a spot in my heart for introducing me to Hell House.
Yeah.
So.
And I figured since this is, basically, I know Blair Witch gets all the credit for being, like, the father of found footage. This came out a year prior to Blair Witch.
Shut up. I was going to say that. No,
And in, like, cult circles, we know this is kind of what kicked it off of the found footage phenomenon that happened in the late 90s and early aughts.
Yes, and this is why I'm glad you gave it to me because, all right, before there was Blair Witch, before there was Paranormal Activity, there was The Last Broadcast. That doesn't mean it was the worst or the best. It just means it was there, which I think means it deserves a little credit.
Yeah, it doesn't get talked about enough.
Doesn't get a lot of as much credit, but let me give a basic setup, and then I'll kind of go into how it's similar, how it's different.
All right.
Basic setup, we got a gruesome murder. We got a murder scene. We got a reporter who wants to uncover the truth. And we got an aspiring TV showrunners who are desperate for viewership.
We feel their pain.
Yes, we feel their pain. No, I'm quite happy with our standing so far.
We're doing a good job. We got a good following.
Yeah, I'm just going to go ahead. We got a little loyal following, which I think is... I'll take a loyal, smaller following than just a bunch of people who are just don't really care.
Yeah.
So basic setup, we have all that. We have, and we're basically following the person who's making this documentary trying to uncover the truth. Does that sound familiar in the year 2024? Sounds like a lot of found footages that we hear nowadays.
Yeah.
Back in the days of public access, children, take a little seat. Let Grandpa tell you a little bit about public access television.
Oh man.
Public access television, before there was Vines, before there were was HBO, internet, and all that stuff. You had public access where people tried to get their TV show projects off the ground, pretty much. A lot of people tried to do pilots of shows and all that business, and it was relatively cheap.
Yeah, like Zach Galifianakis is Between Two Ferns is kind of like a
play on that.
A play on public access, yeah.
It's just, you just have a single stage. It's not really dressed up. It's all about you just trying to kind of home, see what people find entertaining. And then if you get views, then you can, it'll reach the next stage.
Yeah.
So that is what public access is, children. And we have a show called Factor Fiction, and it is on a downward spiral. It is on a downward spiral.
Yes.
It's a Factor Fiction paranormal type show, and in an attempt to boost views, the crew hires a psychic named Jim Seward and a new sound expert called Rein, R-E-I-N, to help them do a live show. This is kind of last-ditch effort to boost ratings. They're going to go and do a live show.
Really ahead of the curve doing, like, a live, like...
For 95, yeah. For 1995, which this is supposed to take place in, yeah, I'm like, oh, you know, 95, that's pretty damn ambitious to do a live show out in the middle of, like, the woods.
Over the internet when everyone was doing dial-up and stuff.
And supposedly they're taking calls and stuff like that, but I think, yeah, they're going to take calls, and their whole thing is they're trying to find the Jersey Devil. That's their little paranormal thing.
Live internet relay chat show.
Yeah, sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
So... Oh, and then what wacky adventures they get into.
Yeah.
That's your basic setup. We got the murder scene. We even have, within the first 15 minutes, we know that there was a murder, and we also have a suspect. The suspect is Jim Seward, who I said earlier, he's supposed to be the psychic, and he is on trial for murder.
Yeah, because he's the only one who came back.
He's the only one who came back from this bloody scene after he hitchhiked, like, 5 miles away. And I gotta say, like, I'm not going to go into any specifics on this one. I'm trying to change up the way I'm doing some reviews because maybe you guys want to see it, but just kind of want to know what our take is and kind of want to generally know what it is. And then you can figure out for yourself if you feel like watching it.
Yeah.
And so that's our basic setup here. And within the first 15 minutes, we get the groundwork. And then the next hour is us, the audience, basically being shown evidence that would later be used in the trial. At the very end, you're going to piece together pretty much at the end, you're supposed to have a full story. You know, you've seen found footage movies. You know how this goes.
Yeah, they're clipping together all the found footage from the scene of the crime.
Yes, and we already have our suspect, Jim Seward. And throughout the movie, you are given details of the murder. You are shown them meeting Jim Seward and saying, oh, yes, he's a psychic. Oh, this is Rein. He's the sound expert. This is what we're doing. And much like found footage, it also jumps a little bit. Oh, bits of the murder, what happened a little bit before? Stuff that's going on in the trial, what happened a little bit before?
Yeah.
It is. Yeah, them arguing.
Yeah.
Yeah, back to the trial. So it jumps around a little bit, which is also another reason why it would be kind of hard to, especially with mockumentary, it's kind of hard to tell a straight story because it jumps around. It tends to jump around a lot.
Yeah.
And that is the case in this one. So that's your basic setup. I won't tell you how it ends. There is, you know, no real shock, but there is a twist, which in these movies there always is.
Yeah, you could tell that movies like Lake Mungo and the Poughkeepsie Tapes were directly inspired by this movie.
And most...
Because it's almost a very similar format.
And most definitely the Blair Witch Project was influenced by this, all the way down to the character names, which they insist these are not actors, these are real people.
Yeah.
And they use their actual names. They change, like, their last names, or they might adjust the spelling.
Yeah.
But they're essentially, the actors' names are the character names in this.
Yeah.
Which I always find it funny. This is not a dig at this movie, but in found footage and just in general, these people are not, these are just actors. Or these are not actors, these are real people. And then you'll see a scene of somebody getting killed with, like, there's obviously a cameraman, like, shooting it, so it's like...
Yeah,
okay.
Like, Grave Encounters doing, like, a spoof of that.
Yeah.
Like, in the second one, they realize that everyone from the first one's missing, and they're like, oh my god, it really happened. We gotta figure this out, yeah.
And even to it being set in the forest. And some of the shots, like, zoom-in shots, it's grainy editing. Now, this one, I think, is a little bit overly edited, in my opinion.
Yeah.
This one's a little overly edited, in my opinion, in which Blair Witch doesn't necessarily do that. They pulled back a little bit. This is, like you said, it was setting down the foundation for what a lot of other movies would perfect.
Yeah. And that's why I was actually really, like, pleasantly surprised when I watched this movie. Because I was like, movie from 95, found footage from 95. No one, I've never heard of it, but let me check it out.
I think that I might have stumbled across this, like, maybe year one of this podcast. I think I was randomly going through Shudder, and I don't think I finished it. I think I might have saw the first 10 minutes. It was when I first got Shudder, and I was just seeing what was on it.
I think I randomly came across this on Tubi one night. I was like, I'll check this out. I'm like, oh, okay.
Sponsored by Tubi.
Yeah. Not officially.
Unofficially.
Unofficial. Yeah.
So, now, overall thoughts of this movie. That's your basic setup. I won't give away the ending, but you have a murder trial. You have it's a found footage. It says it's a pseudo documentary because it combines documentary, mockumentary, and found footage. So that is the basic setup. I won't say how it ends, but I will go smoothly into my ratings for it and go a little bit deeper as to why each thing I rated it and why. Oh, unless real quick, do you have any questions for me? That's another thing I want to do with these is at the end. If you have any questions, since you assign the homework.
So, going into this, what were you at? Like, what were your expectations?
Well, first off, I had never. This was the first time I looked up the trailer.
Yeah.
Because I never watched the trailer for anything that you assigned me.
Yeah.
And I didn't watch the whole trailer. I watched the first 10 seconds of it. I was like, oh, it's found footage. Oh, it's in the 90s. Oh, I don't have to watch anymore. I don't have to watch the trailer anymore. I'm in. Yeah. So once I saw that it was found footage, I was like, Dave is kind of figuring out what I like. he knows that I like certain found footage if it's done right. And he knows I like creature features.
Yeah.
So I was hopeful. And again, I try not to go in with any expectations. So I don't look at any reviews before I give my rating. I make my ratings and then I see, oh, now I wonder how it compared.
Yeah.
So I don't want to go in thinking, oh man, am I grading too harshly or am I being too generous? So I guess no real big expectations. Just let's just see what it is.
Okay. Nice.
I'll go straight into with technicals. Technicals is where I gave it the highest score because of this only cost $900.
Okay.
This cost $900 to make, and I gotta give kudos to anybody who. It said it was like, $12 for like a couple of tapes. Hold on, I got it like right here.
Yeah.
This film was made on a budget of $900 and edited on a desktop computer. $600 was allocated for production. 240 were utilized for digital video stock, and 20 hours of tape for $12 each.
Okay.
And having said that, the idea of us making that prequel Nightmare on Elm Street movie doesn't sound so far-fetched now.
Yeah. A couple of cameras and we can be all right.
We can make the biggest box office bomb of all time.
Yeah.
So I gave that a 6.6. I give it a 6.6. It is not the best edited movie. It's not, but I have to give it credit in regards to how much it cost.
Yeah.
Versus and how they used that money.
Yeah, for a $600 budget.
Yeah. I said there are some repeating clips as the movie goes on. This is an hour and 27-minute movie. They do repeat some clips sometimes, which can get. I think you might see one. There's a specific clip of Jim Seward, the psychic, that I'm fairly certain they used at least four or five times.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, you got to really stretch that to make that hour and a half mark, huh?
Yeah.
And there are some audio mixing things that I think, again, it's maybe they were trying to be a little bit artsy or a little bit kind of like what artsy or whatever like that. But there was some audio mixing that I thought was a little bit like, you didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I said about a 6.6 for technicals.
Okay.
I said the story. Story, I gave a 5. Just a regular 5.
Okay.
The ending, I don't know how to feel about it.
Yeah.
With these movies, I'm not giving anything away because most of these mockumentaries usually have a twist in the last 15 to 10 minutes.
Yeah.
the part where everything makes sense and the audience is like, oh, that's why this happened, and oh my god, I can't. So I don't know how I feel about the ending. I don't think I care for it, even though I like the idea, but I don't think it was pulled off as best as it could, but the direction they were going.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, so I give it about a 5.
Okay.
And for enjoyment, if I were to rank it, like with Poughkeepsie Tapes, Lake Mungo, and Blair Witch and all that stuff, I gotta give this like a 5.1. I did like it, but it is very much the movie that set the groundwork for much better movies.
Yeah.
So a 5.1. I gotta say, though, the narrator's voice, you don't hear him all the time, but his voice can get a little dull to listen to.
Yeah.
But much like with Blair Witch, I was going to say you don't really get endeared really too much to these characters, but you don't really get endeared to, like, the Blair Witch characters, really.
No.
So I can't really deduct points for that.
Yeah.
Because in a regular documentary, you're not trying to be sympathetic. The first goal isn't to be sympathetic to the characters. It's to tell the story of what happened.
Yeah.
So, but I give it a 5.1. I still liked it. I wouldn't turn it off if I was flipping through the channels.
Right. So a total score of 16.7.
Which
sounds about right, yeah.
Which sounds about right. It wasn't bad, and I think for a movie that laid the groundwork for much better movies, it's worth a check out. And if you're nostalgic for the 90s and found footage like I am, I think you'll get something out of it.
Yeah.
And I kind of like doing reviews like this a little bit more, just kind of giving my general opinion and basic outline. So, you know, I'm not going to say I didn't give away anything, and people can still go and decide if they want to see it or not.
Yeah. All right.
Now, meanwhile, I gave you a movie that I have no frame of reference for, other than I saw a little snippet of a trailer for it, and I was like, oh, well, I don't have anything to give Dave yet. How about this one?
All right. I'm just going to read the complete plot off of Wikipedia.
Okay, fine.
A couple is terrorized by their 8-year-old son's imaginary friend.
There you go.
That's the plot.
I know. I knew that was the basic plot, and as far as I know, that as much as I know about it, and then it's obviously there must be more to it. Dave, is there?
So you have this couple, Liz and Josh, and they have a son named Kevin.
Okay.
And Kevin starts having an imaginary friend named Z, and then, you know, Kevin starts getting in trouble in school and blaming Z. So he eventually gets suspended indefinitely out of the first grade or whatever.
So we basically have a child's play set up.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah. And the mother's like, what the hell? We need to figure out why he has this imaginary friend and find a way to make it go away. While the dad's like, he'll grow out of it, whatever.
He's just a kid. He'll grow out of it.
Yeah. And then the mother starts, like, drugging him with, you know, mental pills or whatever.
Mental pills.
Like, something for, like, mental pills for, like, mental health or whatever.
I know what you mean. Health.
Yeah.
Was she doing this behind the husband's back?
Yeah.
Okay.
Caused more rift, and then basically the mom finds out that it's the same imaginary friend she had as a child. And from there, there's a lot of chaos, and then a lot of people just telling her it's all in her head. And yeah, that's the movie without giving away everything.
That's the movie without giving too much away.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, now, and then, you know, the mom's little sister is also there in parts, and like her life's not doing too well, and their mom died, and it wasn't the best movie.
No.
No, I saw the way this movie was gonna end. Like 30 minutes before it happened, I was just kind of waiting for it to happen. And I was just like, oh, okay.
Question.
Yeah.
If it doesn't give anything away, well, I don't know if I should ask this question. I was going to say, do you get to see the imaginary friend, and does he have a neat design? But I don't know if that would give anything away.
The son draws him on a wall, and he looks pretty cool. And then there's a scene where he comes out of that wall and attacks the dad and looks super dumb.
All right, so what are some of the things that, all right, as somebody who has not seen it, so I have no frame of reference, so I can ask you, like, questions to...
Yeah, try to
hash out, like, all right, is it worth the watch or not? How was the actual, like, I have to ask how the kid was, because, you know, kids can make or break a movie for me.
Yeah, that's what... He wasn't that annoying.
He wasn't, like, Babadook level?
Yeah, he wasn't that bad, no. He didn't ruin the movie. Because he is only, like, the focus of the movie for about the first 30 minutes and then shifts to the mom.
Okay.
Yeah. But, yeah, the kid wasn't bad.
How long is this?
An hour and 20 minutes or an hour 25.
Do you feel it, or is it like...
You do feel it, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I have not yet perfected my method for pitching you consistently, like, knocking it out of the park movies.
Yeah. The
this is my first.
Yeah. Pretty good at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just went overboard. Kind of like Insidious. Mm. How in those suspenseful moments, they really do up on the score.
Right.
After a while, I was like, oh, that's kind of annoying.
I think this movie, like, I think the two of the reasons why I gave it off to you is, one, I thought the premise sounded interesting, and two, I think it's relatively high on the rating scale. Not that we go by Rotten Tomatoes, or anything, but I thought that it sounded interesting enough to be like, oh, okay, well, see how it is.
Yeah,
that's a well. Thank you. At least I know. It says like on the old tomato meter, it's a 97. But then again, see, there you go. But then the audience score is a 48. There you go.
Yeah. See, I just tried to look it up, and it was Z from 1969. That one got a 94 and a 93.
Oh, maybe I should have recommended that one.
Yeah.
All right, well, why don't you go down and break it down then? So maybe that'll give us a little better, you know.
Okay, so technicals, it's pretty well shot, I'd say. You could tell that the director knew what he was doing behind the camera. So for technicals, I'm going to give it a 7.3.
Okay.
And then story.
Where it falls apart.
Yeah, the story is not good. And it's like at the end, you only really feel bad for one person.
Okay.
Who had like nothing to do with the story throughout. So I'm going to give it a 4.9.
Okay.
And then enjoyment. Like it's not Hanukkah, Skinamarink level bad on the enjoyment.
But it certainly doesn't sound like you'll be going out of your way to watch it again.
No. I'm gonna give it a 4.3.
Okay.
Like, I'm not gonna go out of my way to see it, but if someone had it on the TV, I wouldn't be like, no, you need to turn this off immediately.
So it looks like we both gave each other pretty mid movies because you hit it out with a 16.5 out of 30.
Yeah.
Wow. What a way to wrap up our homework for the season.
Yeah.
Both gave each other movies
that are just like, that's another way to describe it. See, it's like pretty mid.
Well, it certainly sounds like I kind of got more out of my pick or out of my watch than you did.
Yeah.
Is there anything what would you change? Like, what is like the biggest thing that's probably hurting this?
Just the imagining friend that's supposed to be the antagonist.
Mm.
I would actually make it something.
Like, yeah, you don't think that the imaginary friend itself was played up as good as it could have been?
Yeah, like, you know, they think it's imaginary friend, but actual demon. Like, that would have been cool, but no, it's like...
The payoff wasn't worth it.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair enough.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. Like, the premise of the movie does sound pretty interesting. Because you spend your time like, oh, I wonder what it actually is, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Oh.
You win some, you lose some, you get some good ones, you get some bad ones.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, at least these weren't terrible.
Yeah.
All right, so that's 2 16-ish out of 30 movies, so... Hey, from what you heard, enter at your own risk.
Exactly. Now let's get to a movie that's not mid.
Not mid. Now, before we get into this, because I doubt that very highly that I'm going to have to really go too in-depth into this, I'm fairly certain...
That if people are listening to this, they've seen this movie.
It's like arguably John Carpenter's... It's in the running between that and Halloween for his probably his most famous... horror movie.
Yeah.
You said that you've actually, it's The Thing. John Carpenter's The Thing, which I have said is probably my favorite. It's my favorite horror movie comes down between this movie and probably Silence of the Lambs in terms of my like favorite movie.
Yeah. And I'm more Scream and A Nightmare on Elm Street are my two favorite movies.
If I'm going like the big three, like classics like Jason, Freddy, and Michael, I tend to go towards Freddy,
yeah,
but
for the first movie, yeah, and then like
I just like his humor. I just like especially after like when he started becoming a little more
three,
funny.
His humor was a great mix of Freddy, but yeah,
yeah. But John Carpenter's The Thing, widely known for its fantastic use of practical effects, which is exact. You know, if you know anything about me, I'm a sucker for practical effects.
Yeah. And the effects from when this movie came out? Was it
82.
82. Yeah, the effects are still good for this day.
And still freak me out.
Yeah, they didn't age poorly like a lot of effects from the 80s and 70s do.
Now, in case you have not seen this movie, and it, like, you will watch this movie, and then a bunch of other movies will make sense because you'll realize that this movie gets referenced a lot, or gets, it's either gets referenced or it gets, like, paid homage to or parodied in some way.
Yeah.
But basic overview, in case you don't want to get too spoiled and you want to just hear the basic overview and then go away. A team of Antarctic, what are they, scientists, I believe?
On an American research station in Antarctica, yeah.
Yeah, and they're out in the middle of Antarctica, then all of a sudden they are met with a creature of sorts that has the ability to mimic not just their identities, but their DNA down to the molecule.
Yeah.
And it has only one purpose, to spread itself to all living creatures. And this movie, the horror comes from two things. A, the monster itself.
Yeah.
The practical effects, because all it needs to do is touch you.
Yeah.
Once it touches you, it has two primary functions. Absorb you, and then replicate you.
Yeah.
And it, and the way it absorbs you is fucking terrifying.
Oh, yeah. The dog scene is pretty...
Hey, Train!
Cool. Oh, third member of our podcast here.
They came to say hey for our last bit of homework episode.
Yeah.
but comes down between the monster, and it has those primary functions, and the second bit of horror comes from the paranoia.
Yeah.
It can be anybody at any given time, and that is what John Carpenter plays so well with this movie, in that he, at any point, you can watch this movie a couple times and still be like, is this, I don't know when this person may have gotten turned, or if they got turned, or,
yeah,
or you know. It requires multiple viewings, which I think gets appreciated upon further viewings, which apparently is true, because you said that this movie's grown on you.
Yeah, and I think you left out one thing that does bring the fear.
Hmm.
The isolation.
Ah, yes, the isolation. I'll say that's the third one, the isolation. Sorry, everybody. This movie has three horror things that's going for it.
Yeah, because they're stuck in a very confined space.
And they can't go anywhere.
They can't go anywhere until the spring research team. And it eventually comes to the point where they realize, like, we're not making this out alive.
There is no way, like if even if we were to get away from this area, it is nothing but ice and tundra out there, and it's below freezing.
Yeah.
And with no, like, the last research facility, you have to take a helicopter to.
Yeah.
And so yes, you have isolation, the monster, and the paranoia, which are all done great. And it gives us MacReady, who is a very cool leading man.
Yeah.
Kurt Russell,
Fine.
Who is, yeah, go ahead.
He's a helicopter pilot who kind of just takes charge.
Yeah, he's not elected by any means, but at some point in a movie like this, everybody's getting at each other's throats. At one point during the initial set off where we first see the monster, which is a random dog at the very beginning, this husky is going through the Antarctic tundra with a helicopter chasing after it, and you're like, what the hell's going on? They take the dog in, put the dog in with the rest of the dogs that they had out in the, it was like a barn area or kennel.
Yeah, the dog's being chased by a Norwegian guy.
Yeah, Norwegian.
They can't stand him, and the Norwegian shoots at him, so they kill him.
Yeah. So all you know is that there's this dog being chased by this Norwegian, like, helicopter and getting shot at, and you're like, what is going on?
Yeah.
You don't know what this Norwegian guy is saying, but it must be important because he's yelling it.
Yeah.
And they shoot him, bring the dog in, and big mistake.
Yeah.
The dog, this is where you get the first little taste. You see, like, they spare no expense.
Yeah.
Making this dog, I don't know how you would explain it. He, like, rips open.
Yeah, his skin rips off, and he starts morphing. Legs are shooting out of him.
His little tendrils are shooting out. And
his legs shoot up like a spider. Almost there's like eight of them.
And shooting out this mucus liquidish kind of stuff at the animals.
Yeah.
Which once that stuff gets in your system, you're pretty much fucked.
Yeah.
I think like I'm fairly like if a drop of that thing's blood gets in yours, it just all it takes is one, and then it just takes over your molecule by molecule very quickly.
Yeah.
So we see the dogs, and then they see the dogs. You just see all the dogs are now becoming like this big amalgamation of like,
yeah,
just all forming together, and it's all gruesome and gross and fantastic.
Great effects, yeah.
Great effects. They have to burn the dog nest creature.
Yeah.
This is just a nest of dogs. But this is where the paranoia happens because this now, yeah.
They're realizing like, oh, we brought in something that's changing forms.
It could have already infected one of us.
Yeah.
And this is where the movie, this is where the paranoia sets in. Because now we got a glimpse of what this alien creature is, what it does, and now we're just sitting here with a group of people, and it's like, I don't know any one of these. One person goes crazy. I think it was the doc.
Or it was like the scientist, because he was researching their cells and realized if this thing reaches civilization, it would overtake everyone in a span of was like 27,000 hours.
Yeah, it would spread ridiculously fast.
Yeah, so he decides he's just gonna destroy everything so it can't leave this place.
Everybody's like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
Time so he gets put in timeout.
Yeah.
Which is outside.
Yeah.
Which is outside. What was the place that they had him contained in? It was like a
storage shed thing.
Storage shed. Lock him up in the storage shed, and now they're like trying to figure out what to do.
Yeah.
And the mess of the movie is like, I think it's this person. I think it's that person. Where were you? I think, and then they split up, which you should never do.
Yeah.
They don't come to the realization until they find out one of their own got infected and they catch him outside.
Yeah.
And he is like mid transforming, like in front of their eyes.
Yeah.
And hey, it's not really him. Got to toast his ass.
Yeah.
This thing does not respond well to fire.
No.
That is what you find out. This thing does not like fire because you have to, if you burn away all of the material, there's two ways for this to neutralize this thing. You have to burn away it all the way down to the last molecule, or you got to freeze it.
Yeah.
So it can't go anywhere.
Yeah. And once there was no way for them to leave, they realized that it was trying to basically shut down every heat source and every fire so it could get frozen, go back to sleep until the springtime when the rescue team comes.
Yeah, so this thing is smart. It knows, okay, I have to survive, and the only way to do that is wait for the warmer weather. So if I got to kind of destroy all this stuff so that I can just kind of go into hibernation.
Yeah.
And at this point, I will say, now that Norwegian guy is making sense because what happened a little bit earlier, they actually went to that Norwegian outpost.
Yeah.
And it was desolated, pretty much. Like, yeah. There was nobody there. It looked like some to-do happened over there.
Yeah.
So now he's probably thinking, man, I probably should have let that Norwegian guy shoot that dog.
Right.
So now you have one guy down, a lot of the equipment destroyed. You have scientist who's out in the in timeout. Got to split up. They're all given specific duties. McCree has to do his outpost. He has his lodging outpost area. Because he saw a light going on over there. And he's like, what is that?
Yeah.
Goes over there. He's gone too long. Which, fair enough. Like, they're all in there like, all right, what's taking this dude so long? And I wouldn't trust him either. If he said, I'll be back in an hour, and it's been like 2 hours, I'd be like, yeah, this thing's done got him.
Yeah. He's no longer him, yeah.
But he makes it back in. Damn near froze to death.
Right.
They're about to kill him, but he has like a stick of, was it dynamite or something? He's about to blow them all up. He's like, hey, everybody back off.
Yeah.
Now, what comes next is probably the scene that is the most copied. That comes next. One person gets got, and they're putting him on the table. They're going to try to like give him the defibrillators.
Yeah.
It's like having a fit. He's like freaking out. And I'll say this scene and another scene that I'm going to say coming up is probably the two most like reference. They go to do a defibrillator, and that dude's stomach opens up and bites the hands off the dude giving him the defibrillator.
Yeah.
Turns out he's infected. And the thing about this infected alien is it doesn't have a specific, like, form.
Yeah.
It just turns into things.
Yeah.
Things. It just turns into things. Like, this guy's stomach opens up, and now his stomach has teeth, and he's, like, using it as, like, a mouth. And then they, like, torch it, and then it separates. The head separates and then grows legs and turns into, like, a spider head.
Yeah.
This thing pretty much evolves to stay alive. Like, if part of the body is getting burned away, it'll rip off. With, like, if one part gets separated, it'll form into something and, like, scurry away.
Yeah.
And has that guy gives probably the most real reaction when he sees that head turn into a spider. He's just like, you gotta be fucking kidding me.
Yeah.
The most real reaction.
Right. Like, oh, shit.
All right, now I'm going to ask you, Dave.
Yeah.
What's your play? Let's go ahead and say you're dropped into this thing. You've already seen the dogs, and you already have the guy who got torched to death because we saw it, and what's his face is like in timeout. You're a part of this crew. How are you playing it? Are you like, you guys do your thing, I'm going to isolate away from everybody? Or are you going to be like, we all got to stick together?
That's a tough question, because what gives you your best chance of survival? Because if you isolate, eventually that thing's going to get everyone else, and then you got to eventually face it by yourself.
But if you're with the group, you have no idea. They could all already be infected and you not even know.
Yeah, so it's almost like there's no right answer. This is one of those movies where there's just like not really a way to survive once you get to this point.
Which is cool, because it's like, how are you going to spend your life? Because they already know that the there's no way for them to call out for help since the other guy destroyed the equipment.
Yeah.
I guess figuring we can't let anybody else come here or else it'll get to the mainland.
Yeah.
So near the end, they're all kind of thinking, all right, well, the only thing we can do is just see how the longest we can survive and do what we can to take it out.
Yeah.
After that scene,
they start doing the blood test, right?
Blood test. And that was because that happened to them. McCree went out and then he came back. He was frozen. And then he had an idea.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, this thing acts like one whole organism made of a bunch of different parts.
Yeah.
So the blood of this thing is also part of this thing. So it doesn't like fire. We know this. So if I take a hot poker and touch it, they get blood samples from everyone.
Yeah.
And they're like, all right, I'm going to test this. And I'm going to see who is who. If one of you guys are aliens, then the blood should like flee from the hot poker.
Yeah.
Tests out one guy's thing. He's like, all right, you're cool.
Untie him, gives him a flamethrower.
What was that?
He unties him, gives him a flamethrower.
Unties him, gives him a flamethrower. Everybody's like tied up at this point, and he's like, all right, I'm going to make sure I trust you, and then I'll untie you, and then I'll untie you. The only reason it got to this point is because McCree at this point had the only weapon.
Yeah.
And everybody, even though everybody was trying to kill him at one point, thinking that he might have been the alien, he got the weapon, and he's like, everybody get tied up.
Yeah, I think first he tested himself, showing like, I'm good.
Even though Keith David's in this movie too, he plays Childs, and he's like, that don't prove shit. Like,
yeah, he might have been my favorite character in this movie.
Who, Childs?
Yeah,
yeah. Him and Kurt Russell are fun, especially when they're back and forth.
Yeah,
and test, and then he's like, all right, got this next one, gonna test it. And it just jumps out and freaks out. And wouldn't you know it, they didn't really think this through. They had them all tied up and like tied to a chair and to a couch with everybody and didn't bother to think, oh, well, maybe if one of them's an alien, I probably shouldn't have them tied up with tied together with all the other people.
Yeah, he rips away and the guy with the flamethrower kind of hesitates and then he gets got. Yeah, he gets got.
But they managed to flame the guy and kill the other guy. I feel bad for the other guy. The guy just got infected and then they just torch him.
Yeah.
So he probably was still semi-conscious.
Right.
And they just got set on fire. But I mean, there wasn't anything they could do, I don't think.
No. Not at that point. You're done for.
You're done for. So now we know who's an alien, but there's still one last person who could still possibly be an alien. Yeah. Old temper tantrum guy who's been outside.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, yeah, that guy's still there.
Yeah, test him. He's good. And he's like, hey, can you untie me from this fucking chair?
Yeah. So, all right. So now we have a handful of people.
Yeah.
And it's time to go test out old temper tantrum man outside.
Yeah. And he is gone.
He's gone. He's gone, and he's been busy.
Yeah, they realized he was building a ship to leave underneath that storage shed.
What was in that storage shed? He's been busy, I guess. So I guess he was the thing, part of it. I guess that thing, like, just used its magical thing powers to, like, construct a whole bunch of stuff under, because he was trying to, like, I gotta get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
At this point...
kind of when they decided, like, oh, we can't let this thing leave at all.
Yeah, at this point, it is like, everybody's certain, like, we're not getting out of here.
Yeah.
Even if there was a shadow of a hope, like, at one point we thought that maybe we could get out of here on one of the mobile things, but that's been sabotaged.
Yeah.
It's the only thing we can do right now is just make sure that this thing dies or does not get to the mainland or out. So we gotta go blow this thing up.
Yeah, they end up blowing up the entire research center.
But they blow up the research center and they get down and they blow up the little cavernous area that it's made, losing a few men in the process. A couple of the guys got and changed, but taken out. But at the very end of the day, it's left between Kurt Russell and Keith David, Childs and MacReady. They've blown up the entire estate or the facility, and it's just them.
Yeah.
And they're like, but they don't know.
They don't know if either one's affected.
They're like, you were gone for a little bit. Where'd you go? Oh, I was doing this. What about you? Well, I was doing this. And it is, and they just, and they're like, so what do we do now? And it's like, well, why don't we just sit here for a little while?
Yeah.
And then that's how it ends.
Yeah, you don't know if either one of them was affected, or if they just sat there and froze to death and actually killed it. Yeah,
perfect ending.
Yeah,
and it's great because I mean they both know they're gonna die, and they're both just like, and even if one of them is the alien would also know that it's not gonna be able to get to the mainland, so it's gonna end up freezing.
Yeah, but that's what the thing wanted.
I know.
Yeah, free, so it's hibernated, yeah.
But so we're left with those being the options of, like, it's either they killed it or that thing is going to freeze and come back in the spring.
Yeah.
And that is the thing, and the fact that I've pretty much taken over most of the explanation probably shows that I like the movie.
Yeah.
I'm a fan.
Yeah.
Even down to... Well, oh, no, I'll explain that in the breakdown, but... I have a question for you. So, initially, you didn't much care for this movie when we first started this.
Yeah, well, when we first started podcasting, the only time I saw it was when I was, like, younger, like 14, 15.
Okay.
I don't think I quite gripped what it was doing or care that much about practical effects.
Okay.
Yeah.
But your palate grew.
Yeah, and now I got a full grasp on the story and genuinely... enjoy it.
Oh, well, that's cool. I thank you for giving me the right movie, as opposed to be giving you the wrong one last time. But there's a reason why it's definitely my favorite movie in terms of practical effects.
Yeah.
And definitely in my top three favorite horror movies ever.
Yeah.
The blood scene. You've seen that parodied in a lot of things. And even the stomach thing I've seen parodied by. Now you said you've never seen the original.
Yeah.
Did you ever see the sequel?
No.
Now that's a movie I might have to revisit, even though I saw it once in the theaters because I was like, all right, let's see if they butcher this or if they're going to be whatever. And then I just remember leaving going, I mean, it wasn't the most god awful thing, but I was just like, okay.
All right. So. For technicals.
Oh, this is going to be high.
Yeah.
Trying to think, like movies that I put on this level when it comes to this kind of stuff. But I'm debating if I want to go 8, 9 or 9. I mean, 8, 9. Nah, you know, screw it. For me, I'm saying, you know, everything that's done for that, I'm giving it a 9 on technical.
A 9?
Yeah, I think this is how you do it.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm going to give it a 9 as well. Like, for being from the 80s, the practical effects of this is...
If you can insane. Look at something that was made in 82, or released in 82, and still go, wow, I mean, this doesn't look really fake.
Yeah.
I mean, I can believe that this alien is, like, running around here.
Yeah.
And I know. And it's on my own personal bias of just taking that over CG, but I say a 9.
Yeah, and, like, the score and everything in this movie is done perfectly as well.
That's where I was going to say. The audio, I love the main score of this is, it goes like this. It's just a beat that goes bum, bum.
Yeah.
Bum, bum, which I thought, I was like, when I thought about it after like a couple watchings, I was like, oh, it's mimicking the sound of a heartbeat.
Yeah. John Carpenter is like the master of scores.
Because I just think it's just a tense little beat that goes bum, bum.
Yeah.
Bum, bum. I was like, oh, but it's a tense sound. But then after multiple viewings, I was like, oh, that sounds like a heartbeat. Because at certain points that make at the very end, I think it goes bum, bum. And it kind of fades it out a little bit, like a heartbeat slowing.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, John Carpenter, you brilliant bastard.
Now on to the story.
Oh, my God. I feel like I'd be filleting.
I mean, it's your favorite movie. It'd probably be Nines All Around for you. Yeah.
Story. I'm trying to think of where there might have been any, like, lulls in the storytelling. But, I mean, it plays with the paranoia well. But I'm going to give the story an 8-8.
8-8?
I'm going to give it an 8-8.
Okay. For me, we'll give the story a 7-8.
That's fine.
Yeah. Like, it's a really good story. Really well told. You just don't really learn much about the thing other than it changes.
That's all you kind of really need to know.
Yeah.
It's just this unknown. That's why it's called The Thing. Yeah. It's like it's just this unknown entity. You don't know where it came from.
Yeah. And now enjoyment.
8-9.
For me, I'm going to give it an 8 on enjoyment.
That's fine.
Yeah. I'm going to come back and rewatch it again.
This is one of those movies. It falls in that category of movies where it's like, I like it so much that I only see it once in a while. And yeah. I think most of my favorite movies, I only watch once in a while. Because I'm not like a lot of people who can, like, I can watch this over and over and over again. I think it's because I appreciate a lot that I don't want to get sick of it.
Yeah.
Like, I put that on in there with that. Like I said, Silence of the Lambs, I put in there with that. I put in Cabin in the Woods with that. I really enjoyed Cabin in the Woods, but I don't watch it all the time because I want it to feel cool the next time I see it.
Yeah.
And as recently now, The Menu.
Yeah.
Ever since we watched The Menu, which is also in my top, like, contenders for horror. Like, I don't even know if I can say it's a horror. It's more, to me, that's more like a dark comedy.
Yeah. So your total's 26.7 out of 30, and I give it 24.8 out of 30.
Yeah.
So the average score is, what?
25-something.
Yeah, 25.75 out of 30.
That's a good score.
Yeah.
I don't think...
Very rare we go past, like, 22 or 23 on movies.
And I can't... This might be my highest-rated movie. I actually, from movies that we reviewed, I think it's this and The Menu.
Yeah.
Are probably our highest-rated... It's either that or Last Night in Soho.
I think this, The Menu... Cabin in the Woods and Last Night in Soho might be the 4 highest rated ones we've done.
Oh my goodness. Now, this is it feels weird because this is the first time where we don't have like homework that we assigned.
Yeah.
And this is the last time where it's like, well, we have a couple of ideas of what might come up next.
Yeah. But I do have a couple of rotten reviews from Rotten Tomatoes. Not that many because it's The Thing.
I'm interested. All right, I'm interested to hear what were some of these people, which everybody is entitled to their opinion. I mean, we can't sit there and say, oh, Rotten Tomatoes, you know, is not the be all end all, but, and then disparage people's if they don't like it, because you didn't like it at one point, or was just like whatever about it.
So Peter Stack from the San Francisco Examiner. This version is so full of the thing that it strangles our imagination and becomes a mere exercise in ugly, mechanical horrifics. Very dumb, very disappointing. 1 out of 4.
Peter Stack, I'm calling you out. I'm fighting you right now. Where are you?
Yeah. And then you got Ginger Verne from LA Weekly. The Thing is like The Howling, a showcase for fiber and latex and all the products they produce. And for people who need their nightmares to be completely comprehensible and completely unreal.
You mean fiction?
Yeah.
You mean the movie was a work of fiction and it had a lot of effects, practical effects? Like, that's the... this movie, it's way too in the realm of fiction. It's like, yeah, it's sci-fi horror.
And the last one from Scott Kane. The Atlanta Journal-Constitute. has a little red star that says top critic by his name.
Okay.
Such a pity. John Carpenter is too gifted a movie maker to let nauseating special effects take over his biggest film. But that's what happens in The Thing. 2 out of 5.
That's really funny because so many people praise that movie. So practical effects, like, oh, poor, oh, John Carpenter. Oh, you just let the effects take over and blah, blah, blah. I was like, you know, he's pretty much praised for that.
Yeah. I feel like he just wanted to be a little edgy and be against the grain on this one.
Which I can understand. I think we might have been the same way in our first year.
Yeah.
Of being reviewed. You're kind of like, well, do I give my honest opinion? Or because everybody else seems to like, hey, or I don't want to jump on the bandwagon.
But this is where I disagree with them. Like, the special effects are great and they add to the story. Like, if they were just effects for effects, then I would understand his criticism a little bit more than what he said. But they add so much to the story.
And I'm sure if you were to add up, like, the amount of time where, like, the effects were on the screen, it probably would only take up about, like, maybe 10 minutes worth of screen time.
Yeah, 10 to 15 max.
And the point of that, because you are seeing the alien a limited amount of time, they have to be over the top with it so you know what it is that they're dealing with. That main, it's juxtaposed by, you have this giant, weird creature.
Yeah.
But then it's juxtaposed by, it could be any one of these normal-looking guys.
Yeah.
And so you have to be fantastical and see this big creature being able to do all these fantastical things and just know, well, this guy standing next to me could be that monstrosity.
Yeah. So all in all, Thing is a top-tier movie.
Top-tier movie. Now, in your opinion, John Carpenter's best?
I'd still prefer Halloween.
You still go Halloween? It's between those two, definitely, I'd say.
Yeah.
I would probably say Halloween is more famous, definitely.
Yeah.
I think if you were to go up to people on the street now, especially younger, they would probably know who Mike Myers is before what The Thing is. So
yeah.
Which is fine. You know, he created a horror icon.
Yeah.
And also, oh well, not really. I was gonna say he could be anyway because we never see his face, but you see his face in the first one, and in then Halloween 2018 and that run of three movies, they show his face on the screen, like in the news. We don't see it, but it's like, so. I was gonna say you never really see who Michael is, but I guess that's not true. You do kind of. People know who he is.
Yeah, but in the first one, you know, he's just credited as the Shape.
The Shape.
Yeah.
The Shape, the Thing.
Yeah.
Just these obscure entities.
Yeah. All right. I want to thank everyone for listening.
Yeah. Don't know exactly what's coming up next. We're kind of getting towards the end of this whole season 6 here.
Yeah. So, like always, we appreciate you guys and have a good week.
Yeah. Peace out.
Peace.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Body Bag Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe and leave us a comment as to what you'd like to hear us review. Or any horror movie topics you'd like to hear us rant and rave about.
And while you're at it, you can find us on Twitter at Body Bag Pod and on Instagram at Body Bag Podcast.
Thanks, and we'll see you next time.